addition to embankment, an elite town. There would never be an egalitarian society in Middletown. A beautiful small town bordering an embankment of the St. Louis River. An elite family ruled effectively, and the citizens were quite happy to have such an elegant, although sometimes elusive, rulers. Each daily edition of the town paper spoke eloquently of their efficient town, even listing improvements in the basic elements of life in Middletown. The recent flow of effluent into the basement of several homes in the town centre was quickly cleaned up. The paper reported that 5 days had elapsed before the rulers of a nearby town had responded to a similar problem. In Middletown, the problem was fixed and cleaned up within hours. When news was spread how good life was in Middletown, people who had been ejected from other towns began to relocate. They hoped to benefit from the elevated standards of Middletown and live a life of increased efficiency and orderliness. This had the opposite effect, however, and lowered the quality of people in Middletown. They did not have the elasticity of normal Middletown citizens and began to demand more say in how the town was run. The elite developed an elaborate plan to eliminate these newcomers from Middletown. They detailed that the only people that would be eligible to live in Middletown were those who had been born there. Heavy fines and taxes were placed on those that did not meet this standard. Soon the newcomers left and Middletown returned to normal, ruled by an elite, but happy.
Embark to Endeavour. An overprotective father. Tom embraced Sally when he heard that the embryo his wife was carrying was no longer endangered. They have endeavored for years to have a child. And, while empirical evidence had shown that it was impossible, they had embarked on a journey to pay any cost to embed an embryo in her womb. When they succeeded, their emotion was too great to describe. Tom gave Sally a ring that he had embossed to read Mother. He embellished an empty room in preparation for a baby. And he invited all of his eminent friends over for a dinner celebration. He embodied the happy father. When the news of a threat to the embryo arose, Tom made sure that Sally enacted every recommendation of the doctor to protect it. When he heard that automobile emissions might be negatively influencing the womb, he installed protective material in Sally's room. When he thought that encounters with other people might risk getting sick as well, the room became the empire of all her visitors. He did several other things that truly constrained Sally to her bedroom. Word of a safe embryo now signaled to Sally an emergence from all of Tom's emotive precautions. She felt empowered, and Tom agreed that she could have more freedom. He would no longer encompass every arena of her life. He was just glad the baby was okay. When Sally gave birth to a baby girl 2 months later, she hugged Tom and thanked him for all of his craziness. Now they finally had a child.
Endorse to enthusiastic. enfranchised for nothing. Mohammed told his wife that he had no enmity for the country that had just enfranchised him with citizenship. He was enthusiastic about an enhanced level of freedom, new opportunities to be enterprising, and the enlightenment of his new fellow countrymen. He was sure that his life would be enriched in many ways. He even seemed to be enjoying himself. When an ensemble of old friends from his homeland arrived, however, he was not so enthusiastic. The changes that ensued concerned his wife greatly. He began to enforce strict dietary rules on the family. He spent an enormous time out of the house, and he endorsed an enterprise that did not seem so legitimate. When she could no longer endure all of the changes, Mohammed's wife made an inquiry at the enterprise about what their true business was. She ensured that they would not know who she was by speaking in a higher voice and using a false name. Mohammed came home early that afternoon. He was devoid of any enthusiasm. "I'm only here to enlarge the power of my homeland," he said in a voice she had never heard, "and enlist people to work against this country from within. I'd hope you would never know, but now you've gone too far and I fear what I am entailed to do." Mohammed's wife shuddered when he looked at her with eyes full of hate. She didn't even notice the men carrying guns pointed at her coming in through the back of the house.
Entire to equivalent. Epic fame. André had been very proud of that entree. He had envisioned it as a key element in the success of his new restaurant. His entitlement as a member of the upper class and the envy of every chef in town. When an epidemic plague was blamed on the special enzymes he had used in the entree, however, André lost his entrepreneur's license, all of his equity and his reputation. But that was only the first episode. As millions were entombed, an epoch began that affected the entire world. André became known as the entity that changed the planet. He was not entitled to stay in any land and hunted from country to country. His capture soon achieved epic proportions as each nation equipped special forces to find him and bring him to justice. It was the equivalent of a witch hunt. And André was eventually caught. The world never factored into the equation, however, that André was just a simple, nice man who had accidentally caused the death of millions. The equilibrium of justice was against him, and he was sentenced to death on national television. Everyone thought this payment was equitable. As André was about to be executed, the world gave a collective gasp when, having been asked for any last words, André said, "I have the cure." No one had been able to stop the plague, and suddenly the source of misery was also claiming to be the world's savior. André stepped down from the electric chair and said, You have to have the main course.
Equivocal to a state. After the fall. When they found Mrs. Essay in the estate sale, 40 years after the fall of civilization, people laughed that Missy had written about how society found global warming to be equivocal. That such a developed society could make such erroneous conclusions caused the survivors to eschew all other wisdom that they might have gained from the essence of the books they had found. They did not want to read any more about how the establishment destroyed itself. Volcanic eruptions were still happening every day, and they had to seek shelter or they would be eradicated as well. That era was over because of their errors. So much had changed since then. Only a few of the buildings erected in the past remained standing. Erosion made it impossible to grow plants. Escalating temperatures made it even more difficult to breathe in the already scalding air, and established bases of refuge were becoming harder and harder to find. The most recent shelter, an old escalator shaft that went deep into the ground, was causing more interest anyhow than an old essay. As they walked down the eroding tunnel, they established that this was also a remnant of that dead society. When they reached a door and opened it, however, they discovered something that only the old-timers knew about. A movie theater. This, they said, was the dominant escapism at the fall of society. Essential for those people who only valued entertainment while their world collapsed. As one of the older men turned on the projector, the rest of the group sat down and stared in amazement as images flashed on the screen. A child dropped the essay to the floor, never to be looked at again.
Esteem to exacerbate. A protected estuary. As Molly Lakewater walked into the Bird estuary, she was quite proud of her ethnic heritage. Here was a protected area that her esteemed ancestors had valued. Here was an everlasting piece of her past. Here was the essence of her culture. When international scientists had finished their evaluation to declare that the land should be placed in eternal protection, her family had rejoiced. It was the only ethical solution, others declared, and the only way to let evolution continue untouched by man in at least one place. The estuary had almost been destroyed. It was only because of her family's care that the estuary planned destruction and called in the experts. This had exacerbated developers. But the government rewarded Molly's family by not evacuating them or forcing them to stop their fishing and trapping in the area. Their presence on the land evoked images of a better time, even for the government. And no event would ever persuade them to destroy this land. even if developers gave large estimates of the money that they would add to the local government by developing houses in the area, this land would evolve in peace. Eventually, everyone appreciated the estuary, became part of a local etiquette to take visitors to see migratory birds. And when a drought threatened the area, evaporating much of the water, locals even dug a ditch to bring water in from the city reservoir. No one ever tried to evaluate changing the estuary again. It was a model of environmental protection.
Exact to exorcism. The exhibition of an exorcist. Bishop Kane was under exorbitant pressure from his superiors in the Catholic Church to teach young priests the exact procedures for conducting the exorcism of a demon from a child. He was reluctant, believing that only a few exclusive priests capable of exercising self-control and intense physical exertion should have the knowledge he had acquired. Bishop Kane also knew that demons were real and not something to be toyed with or used in a teaching setting. An executive decision from the highest levels forced him, however, to exhibit his method and take students on a real exorcism excursion. Bishop Kane agreed, but only as an exception, saying that if anything went wrong, he would be exempt from all blame. His authorities agreed. When students heard this, they were exhilarated and anxious for this exceptional opportunity to see how Bishop Kane worked. The excess that they encountered during the exorcism was so excessive that the students all ran for the exit. None were able to exemplify Bishop Kane in his conduct, and none were able to exert as much emotional willpower as he in the face of the demon that controlled a young 12-year-old girl. Excluding the young priest named Banning, who had come from a very troubled childhood, all fled, never to express an interest in exorcisms again. Banning cowered in the corner, terrified but unable to move. The results of this exhibition exceeded all of Bishop Kane's expectations. Now he had the sole decision-making power for who should and should not be trained on conducting exorcism. Everyone agreed that this was the best approach.
Exotic to extensive. Exploring for diamonds. Kip had extensive knowledge of the area under exploration, but he had no expertise in creating explosions. He was an expert at import and export, and a long-term expatriate with more exposure to life in the jungle than any other foreigner. The explosives were Monsieur Philippe's responsibility, and he took exquisite pleasure in the fact. Kip might lead the expedition, but success depended on Philippe. It was a good team. As they went deeper and deeper into the exotic jungle, expanding their search, Kip monitored all expenditures as well as the extension of their permit into unknown areas. The scenery was exquisite, and Philippe was happy to explore. But they had just extended their permit for the last time, and time was expiring. They needed to find what they were looking for. When they found it, Monsieur Philippe went to work. Sounds never heard in the jungle followed, and they successfully exploited the land for over $10 million worth of rare diamonds. Their return journey was as expedient as possible, so that they would not be expelled from the country without their prize. When they exposed the amount of diamonds that they had found at the border, however, they were given trouble. But the permit was explicit that they could take out whatever they found, and they were released to return home. The border guards were furious, but their boss, the chief of police, was able to send his family to America the following year, never to return.
Extent to facade, extinguishing the extravagant. As Fire Chief McAllister used his extinguisher to put out the fire, he couldn't help noticing that the extravagance of the interior of the club was extreme in comparison to the poor quality of the exterior. It was a shame, he thought to himself, that this place was burning down. He lifted his extinguisher to put out a flame on some eye-catching fabric. He knew, even if he was trying to save a small piece of the club, that the extent of the fire damage would require complete remodeling, a new facade, and an extraordinary sum of money. McAllister hoped also that the owners would be as extravagant as before. It had obviously been a fabulous place. The type that he had thought of had become extinct. Anyhow, if they restored the place, he told himself, he would certainly return here to take his wife out to dinner. When he had exterminated the last threat of fire, the owners came in. The exuberant celebrations of previous days were forgotten, as they felt the loss of each facet of their precious club. They had hoped that the damage would only be external. But now, as they extracted themselves from the ruins, they knew that they would have to start over from scratch. Looking at McAllister, they extolled him for his extra attempt to save the club. McAllister apologized and shared his views that he would come back if they fixed the place up again. They both fabricated weak smiles and left, determined to rebuild again.